Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode of the Best of the Pigskin Dispatch's football history headlines, we discuss the Chicago Maroons of Amos Alonzo Stagg and their holiday West Coast barnstorming tour and some more great NFL championship games, as well as many more Hall of Fame legendary stories and birthdays, all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And boy, we have a great show for you. We're getting your year's end for this exciting football season and for the calendar year. And what better way to do it than to celebrate some football that happened on this day? So sit back and enjoy this Best of the Pigskin Dispatch broadcast. And today's football history headlines will focus on the date of December 29th in football history. And our first one will start off in 1894 on that date. And it's one we alluded to a few days ago on Christmas. It happened in Los Angeles, California this time. The University of Chicago and Stanford rematched of the December 25th, 1894 game where the Maroons won 24-4. But this time in this game in Los Angeles, the Cardinal tasted victory for Walter Camp as they defeated Chicago 12-0. Author Jennifer Taylor Hall, in her book Amos Alonzo Stagg, College Football's Man of Motion, recounts that Stagg and his young bride were on a sort of a honeymoon after their wedding a few months earlier back in September. But they took 17 football players with them and scheduled games on the western side of the U.S. to help offset the travel costs. Two of these games were against Stanford, and the second contest with the Cardinal may have set a stage for neutral site postseason bowl games of the future. Don't take my story from me. Miss Taylor Hall tells it much better in detail in her awesome book on Stagg, so make sure you check it out. Once again, it's Amos Alonzo Stagg, College Football's Man in Motion by author Jennifer Taylor Hall. You can look it up on Amazon. December 29th, 1940. It was the third NFL All-Star Game, where the format at that time was for the NFL champions would face a roster of the best players from the rest of the league. If you remember back on our December 8th post, the Bears totally dominated the NFL championship game over the Washington Redskins in a 73-0 rout. According to a 2019 Reddit post, the game was knotted at 14 apiece going into the halftime locker room. The Bears used great defense and some timely Sid Luckman throws to score twice more in the second half as the Chicago Bears showed again why they were the best team as they defeated the NFL All-Stars 28-14 in the exhibition game. December 29, 1957, at Briggs Stadium in Detroit. The 1957 NFL Championship game once again had the Jim Brown-led Cleveland Browns facing the Detroit Lions. An article on the Oakland Press website gives details on the game. The Lions had to overcome a 20-point third-quarter deficit the previous week on the road against San Francisco's 49ers and Y.A. Tittle, the Niners quarterback, to make it to this title game. The Lions scored two touchdowns in each quarter, led by running back Steve Junker with two touchdowns and 109 yards rushing, and fellow backfield mate Jim Duran, who had 101 yards on the ground with a TD. The Detroit Lions dominated the Cleveland Browns 59-14 to win the title again. December 29, 1963, at Wrigley Field in Chicago. The 1963 National Football League Championship took place as the Windy City's Bears entertained the football giants from the Big Apple. At the kickoff, temperature was hovering right around 10 degrees Fahrenheit, according to a story on American Football Database. The Giants quarterback Y.A. Tittle started the game scoring by orchestrating a 41-yard drive and completing a 14-yard touchdown strike to Frank Gifford. The Bears defender Larry Morris then took center stage as he injured Tittle and then later picked off an errant pass by the veteran QB, returning it to the Giants' 6-yard line, setting up the Bears' first touchdown. Y.A. remained in the game and was forced to throw from his back foot, which gave way to more crucial mistakes that the Bears took advantage of. Chicago Bears handed the New York Giants a 14-10 loss to give Chicago the title. December 29, 1965, per the Blade Online website, the CBS network negotiated a contract where they purchased television rights for the 1966 through the 1968 NFL seasons for $18.8 million a year. This was a financial windfall for the league, and it was instrumental in its success for the future. December 29, 1968, at Cleveland Municipal Stadium, the NFL Championship game had the Baltimore Colts blanking the Cleveland Browns 34-0. With a victory, the Colts earned the right to face the NFL's top team in Super Bowl III. Let's just say we promised to cover this big game on our January 12th football history headlines. December 29, 1968, the AFL Championship game was played at Shea Stadium in New York. Jets signal caller Joe Namath threw a touchdown pass to lead the Jets in a victory over the tough Oakland Raiders squad 27-23 to advance to play the Colts in Super Bowl III. December 29, 1974, at Oakland Coliseum, the AFC Championship game had familiar foes as the Pittsburgh Steelers faced the Oakland Raiders per the Pro Football Reference site. Powered by running back Franco Harris's 2 touchdown runs and 111 yards on the ground, the Steelers conquered the Oakland Raiders 24-13 to advance to their first championship game in Super Bowl IX. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines and let me remind you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
He was known as the Bronze Bullet, tied the world record in the 45 and 60 yard dashes, and while he stood just 5'4", he tied the legendary Red Grange for most touchdowns in the Big Ten in a season with 10 and went on to score 45 more in the pros. Join me, Warren Rogan, and football historian Andy Piasek as we take a look back at the phenomenal career of Buddy Young on Sports Forgotten Heroes.
December 29, 1974, Metropolitan Stadium in Bloomington, Minnesota. The NFC Championship game saw the Minnesota Vikings defeat the Los Angeles Rams 14-10. The Purple People Eater defense picked off Rams quarterback James Harris twice to complement the timing scoring of Fran Tarkenton, leading the Viking offense to earn a right to face the upstart Steelers in the big game. December 29, 1983, at Memphis, Tennessee, the Liberty Bowl, which has also ended up being the second college football holy war per the OnThisDay.com website. In the contest, Notre Dame defeated Boston College 19-18 in a thriller. The game's MVP was BC quarterback Doug Flutie per the SportsReference.com website. December 29, 2007. Quarterback Tom Brady of the New England Patriots sets an NFL record at the time, throwing his 50th touchdown pass, and the New England Patriots become the first team in NFL history to finish the regular season at 16-0. December 29, 2018. Per the OnThisDay.com website, the results of the BCS semifinal game at the 85th Orange Bowl was that number 1 Alabama outlasted number 4 Oklahoma 45-34 to advance. Now let's talk about those birthday boys for the Hall of Famers on this December 29th, and we'll start off in the year 1909, Boston, Massachusetts. Tufts end William Johnny Grinnell was born. The Tufts Jumbos featured Johnny as their end from 1932 through the 1934 seasons. In Grinnell's final season, the Jumbos were 8-0, and Johnny was selected to the Associated Press's first Little All-America team. The National Football Foundation selected Johnny Grinnell to enter into their College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1997. December 29, 1911, the University of Southern California's tackle Tay Brown celebrated his date of birth. Tay was a member of both the 1931 and 1932 national championship teams for USC. The NFF says that he set the Los Angeles Coliseum record of blocking 4 kicks in one game. Tay entered the College Football Hall of Fame in 1980. December 29, 1915, Providence, Rhode Island was a place, and a tough fullback from Holy Cross, Bill Osmanski, was born. The footballfoundation.org website states how the great balance, speed, and power of Osmanski is what made him and his Holy Cross teams of the late 1930s truly special. This team was 23-3-3, and the losses altogether totaled only a 5-point differential. In 1936, he had runs of over 60 yards 4 times and was named to the All-America team in 1938. The NFL voters inducted Bill Osmanski into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1973. December 29, 1924, in Pana, Illinois, Illinois' great lineman Warren Amling was born. The NFL inducted Warren Amling into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1984. December 29, 1936, Ray Nitschke, the feared middle linebacker of the Green Bay Packers, was born. Ray was the third overall pick in the 1958 NFL draft by the Packers, and he played with the team for 15 seasons. Nitschke defended both the run and the pass well, and his 25 career interceptions would indicate that. Ray was a member of 5 championship Green Bay teams and was an MVP of the 1962 NFL championship game. The Pro Football Hall of Fame placed Ray Nitschke into its gold jacket in 1978. We want to make sure you don't miss tomorrow's December 30th football history headlines, so hit that subscribe button right now on your embed player or your favorite podcast player of your choice, and make sure you visit pigskindispatch.com or thesportshistorynetwork.com, or heck, why don't you visit them both, because there's some great stories on both of them. And don't miss tomorrow's December 30th headlines, because we're going to talk about an NFL coach that was fired by 2 different teams on the same day of the year, and it's December 30th. And we'll also talk about a great thing that Patrick Mahomes did on December 30th, and we'll talk about that tomorrow, so don't miss it. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Offices of the Pittsburgh Guardian newspaper circa 1924. But for Marla Delft, assistant editor, everything was about to change. For she was about to discover the awesome attractiveness of Row One brand retro sports paraphernalia items, thanks to Orville Mulligan, sports writer.
And there it is.
Wow, Orville, that's really the bee's knees.
Isn't it just? A poster-sized replica of the actual 1909 World Series program cover.
I can see that. But where did you get it? And where'd you get it framed?
I ordered it from the Row One website, where over 6,000 items of sports memorabilia from the 1880s to the 1990s are available for reproduction in multiple sizes and in several different materials, with over a dozen styles of frame to choose from for prints like this.
Well, I'm sure Mr. Delft would love to put up more of these in the office. But I'm equally as sure they're beyond this newspaper's budget.
Not at all, my dear Marla. See for yourself. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com/row1.
sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. Oh my, these are good prices. Oh, and look at this stuff. Oklahoma-Nebraska football. College basketball art. Michael Jordan items.
And so it was that Marla Delph discovered the splendiferous magic of Row 1 sports memorabilia arts and prints. You can, too, by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/row1. That's R-O-W number 1 today for access to the full Row 1 catalog of gallery prints and gifts like t-shirts, long-sleeve shirts, telephone cases, coffee mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Act today for 15% discount off all prints with coupon code SHN15 and 20% off all other items with coupon code SHN20 at checkout. And keep your dial locked to the Sports History Network for the exciting chronicles of the 1920 sports world in Orville Mulligan, sports writer, coming soon.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.